Hey Dave. Okay, I'm recording. This is on the 6th of February, and I'm responding to yours of your oddcast of the 5th, I think. And there's another one before that, maybe a couple of them that are related. And I promise I'll go back and get those. I have a new technique for this one, where last time I would work from an outline. This time I'm working from notes I'm making on your outline, and I put to the top the three things you asked me to do, and because it's writing an outline, I thought I'd expand on each of those. And I have two of them down here, and the third one got lost in the rest of the outline somewhere, so hopefully I'll cover all three. The first was to write a blog post in Little Outliner, and I think you said LO2 or Little Outliner 2. Anyway, that's what I called it, LO2. And I've done that, and it's in the my outline. As another was to create an AWS account, an Amazon Web Services account. And I've got to say, man, that is opaque shit. And I put a couple links in there, but I'm gonna need some help. So maybe there's an easy way to do it, and a shortcut for doing it where I can just go in, put in some stuff, and I've got it. But I don't know. So anyway. A minor thing, you like calling it a voicemail cast? I think that's good. I like the term oddcast. It doesn't mean that that voicemail cast or voicemail blog or voicemail one-to-one voicemail are bad. It's just I think hashtag oddcast. It's new. It's short. It speaks of a new category, kind of. But anyway, that's what I find myself calling it. It's easier to put in a header or in a file name. You talked about working from an outline, and you say you always do this. That's really interesting, and I think at least subconsciously I do. And you also said outlining without users is useless. That's an interesting one-liner. And that there are outlining people out there on the web, and I'm one of them. I have a side note there, which is that you said that there are outliners out there and they make money. I was thinking of like Omni's outliner, which I've tried. I don't like it. I don't even like their graphics program, OmniGraffle, I think. I don't know why. I actually do all my graphics in PowerPoint because the little way that you can like create boxes and outline, and I mean, you know, graphical outlines and shapes and drop an image in there and change the fill and that kind of thing and put arrows and lines between them. That's very primitive and simple in PowerPoint, even though Microsoft has done its best to make it as complex as possible. That facility is still pretty simple, and that's what I use. I just copy stuff out of there and put it somewhere else if I want to put it in, say, a blog post. Anyway, I am just extraordinarily impressed at what happened between your work on Think Tank and more, and subsequently, and what Microsoft did with outlining. Their outlining, I fucking hate it. It's so, so bad. And it'd be great if you could write in the outline and then turn it into the text, but they're different. They're like, what? And they have that thing with styles, which kind of concatenates a whole bunch of variables that are played out in the formatting. Horrible, just horrible, and unchanged in many, many years. And I'll get into a little more in a minute about that, and I'll stick with kind of my outline of your outline. Which is you're interested in getting the ball rolling in concert. And you corrected me on my saying it's developers and users digging together. And you said, it's not. You never said that. It's partying together. Yeah, I knew that. And I heard that. But at the same time, I could swear it. I went digging around for it that you actually did say digging together at some point. And you actually used the term digging and digging without the G at the end in a number of places, but you're right. You said partying together. Either way, you know, we get the same meaning. Also, an idea processor and not a thought processor. I said thought processor. And I knew that difference too. And that has to do with the way my brain works, which I'll explain later because it's a giant digression. And that I shouldn't necessarily respond to everything or listen to everything, which is but what I'm doing here because I do want to stay kind of in concert here. So, and you said you wanted to get down to what more means to me, and so I'll now digress into more. And for listeners that don't know, more was a program that that Dave and Living Video Text made around the in the late 80s into the turn of the 90s, I think, that I not only fell in love with, but it was the writing instrument for me for many years after that. And in the early years, it was also a presentation tool. And, you know, you said that you hit a vein and, you know, the great story about your friend Pete's house and how expand and collapse and moving things came up, and it was like programming. And here's what I'll tell you what more means to me or what it meant to me. And I'm kind of jumping around your thing. Primarily, it was for writing. It was not for presenting. And I mean, and originally doing bullet charts made sense. And this is back, I mean, when presenting, God, you could hardly even put a graphic into a presentation. You know, you just basically made a bullet chart, what you called a bullet chart, or what Moore called a bullet chart, or just bullets, you know, where each level in an outline, a top level or A level, would be like the headline, and then underneath that would be some bullets. And at the beginning of this, we were still doing my company, the ad agency, ad and PR agency that I worked for, that I was a partner in. We did all of our presenting on overheads, on transparencies. We would print them out. We would print out each slide on a piece of paper from a laser printer. We would put the transparency stuff into the laser printer, or maybe it came out of the laser printer on paper, and then we'd then use a copier and copy it onto transparencies, whatever it was. And it was really primitive, and there's nothing like it that's analogous to today. Another thing too is that the way I do presentations now, I don't even do presentations. I just talk. It's a rare time when I'm talking that I actually use slides anymore. I use PowerPoint, as like I said, as a graphics tool. I'll use it when other people are using it. I'll use it sometimes in a meeting. As I said in another one of these oddcasts, the way most people present, slides are a crutch. They're speaker's notes. They're their own speaker's notes. And they make no sense afterwards. But let me get to what outline. So you don't need to put bullet charts into little outliner. Don't need them. What I need and like and loved about Moore, and I like about Little Outliner as well in its own way, is writing. I'm primarily a writer. Oddly, I'm a very visual guy. If you know, they're the types that are visual and kinetic and auditory. I'm primarily a visual guy. I see the world in a very visual way, but the way I used Moore was almost entirely as a writing tool. It was a much, much, much better word processor than Word has ever been. It was just a great writing tool because I could reorganize what I was writing. You know, when you talked about it, ThinkTag being an idea processor, if I had a series of ideas that I wanted to reorganize, it was very easy to do that with a keyboard command. I liked the cloning, where if I had to have two paragraphs in the same chapter, in two different chapters, same paragraph in two different chapters, I could put it in two at once. Whoa, you know, hoisting to look at something for a while and then bringing it back to the whole outline. I didn't use hoisting that much, but it was there. You know, it was there as an option, so I could concentrate on one section or one thought or whatever it was. And there were little things that Moore had that I've never seen anywhere else and were wonderful. Here's one that's really simple. Date saved. Date and time saved. Last saved. Let's say you have a document that you're going to print out and it was finished at 5:15 on February 3rd. There's a footer you could put into Moore that had the date saved on it. The date and time saved. That when you close the thing up, and that one, let's say it's version 4, and you look at version 4 in the Finder, or I suppose you could do the same thing if it worked in Word, but, you know, in its interface. But you could look at the date and time on the file, and it matched the one on the printout, or the one that's at the bottom of the page in the document. It was incredibly helpful. Word still fucking doesn't have that. It's not there. Word's got the entire kitchen sink. It has the whole pantry. It has the whole grocery store in there, but it doesn't have that. And that was a killer feature. And it may have just been something from a grab bag that you guys had at Living Video Text, or maybe it was Symantec by then, but boy, was that handy. That was just a great thing. So I wanted to let you know that. And, you know, I kind of wish I could fire up an old Macintosh and fire up more on it and remember exactly all the ways that I used it, because it's been, man, what's it been, like 25 years? It's been since the mid-90s, I think. I don't know when. I mean, whenever it was that, you know, Apple's latest operating system deprecated it to the point, maybe it was when they went to the Intel processor from the Motorola one, from the 68000. I don't know. Anyway, there's so many things you're bringing up here that I had kind of forgotten about. Another was that Bernie DeKoven actually worked at Living Video Text. I had either not known or forgotten that. And then he had this technography thing. We actually used him as a technographer and did some technography at our agency using Moore. And it worked well. And I don't know why we didn't stick with it, or maybe we did and internalized it somehow. I don't know. I know that it was very much a part of how we worked. And there are a few other people that worked very much the same way. I know Stuart Brand and I talked once about how much he loved Moore and worked with it. Yeah, so that's an interesting thing about Bernie. When I met Bernie the first time, I guess it was in like 80, I'm remembering the building, so it was 87, I think. And he said to me, "I'm 5 years ahead of my time." And I said to him, "How come I can see you now?" And we got off on a riff about that. It was pretty funny. Anyway, he was a great guy. It's really, we became good friends, and I'm really sad that he's gone. Anyway, he was a big fan of yours, and that was, you know, as am I. And I think, you know, there are people that appreciate what you bring to the world, and, you know, he was one of them. So I want to talk a little bit about how my brain works, and you saw a bit of it with, and this is not something I would generalize at all. You saw a little bit of it on the partying versus digging together and thought processor versus idea processor. Those are called Gestalt substitutions. My brain does that, and it's because my brain is actually not good at processing some things. Not long after Joyce and I got together, this is back in like 1990, she noticed some oddities in the way I was listening, and that went kind of beyond being an ADD case, which I am. But why are you missing this? Why are you hearing something I'm saying that I'm not saying? Or that might be insightful of you, but that was not exactly what I was saying. And we had just heard some people on KQED, they were near San Francisco at the time, living up there, and that we're at this firm in the South Bay that did these all-day tests that went way beyond ADD and dyslexia and all that stuff. Their last name was Livesay, L-I-V-E-S-A-Y. They were really good. I don't know if they're still there or not. I think it was called the Dyslexia Treatment and Counseling Center at the time. But they worked with adults, and they gave me this all-day test. And I told them I hate being tested. I've always hated being tested. As you may know, and as some of people who read me may know, I have an enormous, whatever the opposite of a hard-on is, about IQ testing. My mother worked in a school system, same school system I grew up in, and between those and other school systems, my known IQ scores had an 80-point range from really dumb to really smart. And there are times that I've been privileged by my test scores, like getting put in the fast track at kindergarten, and for the first three grades, all the way up to the sixth grade, I was in like the fast group, what they would now call gifted and talented. Maybe they were just basically divided the classes into what they called a quintile, five classes of 30 kids, and the smart ones went in. This teacher got those, and very bell curvy. This is at the end of World War II, where IQ testing was used a great deal, and it was based on IQ tests. By the sixth grade, my actual IQ score had gone way down, and the teacher thought it was an insult to him to have me in the class and wanted to kick me out. So they took me off to see a shrink, and the shrink examined me and talked to me a lot and gave me a bunch of testing, and and came back and said, no, he's actually still smart, but he's just not a good student. That's all there is to it, which is true. I was looking out the window. I didn't want to be there. I hated school. A lot of it had to do with listening. I didn't know that, really. It had to do with listening. And so I stayed in that class. But by the time I was done with the eighth grade, my test scores were roughly rounded to zero. I mean, my reading score was at the 2 percentile. I think my vocabulary was at zeroth or something like that. The school wanted to put me into vocational technical high school to learn a trade like auto mechanics or wood shop or to work on an assembly line somewhere. And my parents sent me off to, a boarding school. And I continued to do poorly there, but I learned a lot. Because I always did learn a lot. I just didn't do well in school. So what was that about? So at this center in the South Bay, and they examined me all day, they said, well, actually, on this test here, there's one test I took, which involved doing things like take a look at this complex geometric shape and draw it 90 degrees off. And I could ace that. They said we tested 5,000 people on that one, which had all kinds of multiple choices and stuff like that. They said you scored better than anybody we've ever had. You only missed one thing, and that's where you mistook convex for concave, and we know you know the difference. That was a Gestalt substitution. But on another test, they had me read text, and when the text was in narrow columns with short words, I not only stumbled all over it, I remembered almost nothing. And they said, this is a brain thing. This is the way your brain works. If we only gave you this test, we would call you mentally retarded. And if we gave you only the other test, we'd say you were exceptionally gifted. And there were many tests in between. Like, they really thought I must have been dyslexic. I aced the dyslexia test. All of the things with the letters are switched and the rest of it, none of it. My spelling test was perfect as well. And I remember I taught myself to spell well, and I probably taught myself pretty much every fucking thing anyway. So I'm saying fucking because I'm from New Jersey, that's where all this happened anyway. But the way the brain works is that long words get in better than short words, and I'm filling in while I'm listening. I'm not hearing everything, and I'm filling in a lot of when I'm listening of other words that are in the same gestalt and might work. That's how I, you say feature for function and, partying for digging. I've heard both of those from you. I threw digging in there instead of partying. And I'll tell you, I've lost business because in my writing, I've done some of those mistakes. And for example, I did some work for Boole & Babbage, a company called Boole & Babbage. And I put in baggage by mistake, and they fucking hated that. Oh, my God. How could you ever do something so stupid? Are you mocking us, they're saying? No, I made not even an honest mistake. I made a mistake that my brain would make. So there are upsides to this because I'm always thinking of other things. And those other things turn into humor, in many cases, turn into humor. I'm always kind of, my mainspring is ready with comebacks a lot of the time. I'm one of those natural jokers who's always thinking of a way to not so much make fun of things, but to come back at somebody with a humorous line. And part of that is about understanding. If they laugh or if they expand on it, then I know that I was heard and I've heard them, and then they'll explain. Or I don't even know how to fully explain that. But what I wanted to make clear there is that, boy, I wouldn't want to generalize for me on some of this stuff. I think on getting outlining, however, as a writer, I don't think I'm that exceptional. I think all writers are similar in some ways. And one of them is that believing that the world really needs to hear what they have to say. Rollo May, many years ago in a book on creativity, said that writers alone among all creative types suffered the illusion that the world really needs to hear what they have to say. And that's very true, I think. I don't know if it's always an illusion, but that's part of what motivates me. I need to say stuff. I don't have writer's block at all. That really makes me a natural-born blogger. I can just go blah very easily. And I enjoy the craft of writing and of rewriting. And I've become good at it. So, but being able to move ideas around and improve on ideas and section them off. And, to me, working from an outline isn't starting, has never been, here's the full outline that I'm going to follow religiously, as if this was the shop manual for what I'm going to do. No, it's I'm going blah a number of times, and then I'm crystallizing each of those, and I'm moving them around. That's how I'm writing something long. The way I blog, and now I want to get into blogging, and I realized this when looking at my old blog, my old frontier-based blog, where I did use headlines. And that's interesting because and I think I've told you this before, but it bears repeating, the headline is actually the last thing I'd write. I'd have a placeholder there, but it was a header. I mean, it was a level up from the text. So I'd write text, and then I would put a headline above that. That's usually not the one I started with. I mean, I might write it about, let's say it's geology, and it would be about the, and then I'd write a piece about, I'm just making this up. I probably wouldn't write about this because it's too boring, but it's an outline in my head. In my head, because I like geology, there's a big long outline that is all the eras and epochs of geologic history. So I might have one that says Cretaceous, and then I'd write a piece about the last of the dinosaurs, and then something about the asteroid, and then I'd create a header, you know, which would be kind of like the punchline, which would be like, say, but that was a bummer. You know, like that, and then, but that was a bummer is the headline that draws you into the text below. And not a lot of thought went into that, but it was part of my style. Again, that's not a style I generalize. But what I'm doing and what I did by writing the sample blog post for you was get back into the groove of writing the way I did on my old blog. And I'm using hand gestures here. In my blog from 1999 to 2007. So for 8 years, I wrote that way. And I kind of stumbled into it at first, but then I got into a groove on it. And then you had this thing, too, called stories in that kind of blog where I could, if I wanted to write an essay, I could put it in there. And that was a second thing. I have a link to it, but it was a standalone URL. What WordPress does is that. It's a way to write a story. It has a headline and it has an essay underneath. And I've become pretty good at that, but that's one of the reasons why I'm writing a few blog posts a month, whereas I used to write many a day. And all of that energy has instead gone to Twitter. And you got me to do Twitter too. I don't know if you remember that. I remember you wrote me a note, a quick note saying, you have to get on this. It matters. It's important. And I did. It was early on. It was like in 06 or so. It was really early. And I've been there ever since. And I've got my 27,000 followers or whatever they are. But, you know, I have, I think it's 25,000. But a parking space has 25,000 cars going by. That's what followers are like on Twitter. And, you know, and 10 of them engage the parking space in a given day, right? It's kind of like that. I'll have, you know, 10 or 15 or 20, you know, that actually engage something that I wrote. It's interesting to me that I will get, this happens more actually on Facebook than it does on Twitter, but it happens on both. Let's say I write a tweet or I put a post into Facebook that links to something I wrote in my blog. I will get, you know, let's say 10 likes. How many reads do you think that gets me? Visits even to that blog, maybe 5. How do you like something that you don't go to? I mean, this is part of what's happened with the web. I mean, it's so noisy now that people just say, that's a good tweet. That sounds cool. I'll like it. And maybe that'll help, help Doc in some way. Medium, I've used almost entirely to repost stuff that I put on my blog. And early on, I found that it was not only a much prettier interface, I got to admit that, you know, and that's really the fault of WordPress and of the theme that my blog at my Harvard blog has, and all of the other ones I've worked on as well. You know, Medium looks better, no doubt about it. And I kind of like their, you know, if you're writing originally in there, it's kind of nice in some ways. I don't like the way they do quotes with that vertical line. It doesn't line up quite right, but that's a quibble. And there are a lot of other quibbles I have with them, but I did it mostly just to sort of, you know, extend what I already wrote somewhere else. But one of the things that they have with the stats that's really interesting to me is that they break out how many visits versus how many reads and the percentage that people have read through them. And for a writer, those are pretty disappointing figures. The only one that matters is who's read through, really. Sometimes, oddly, and maybe not too oddly, some of the longest ones get the most reads all the way through. But that's when the topic is a really kind of important one, I guess. And I'm not asking for that, by the way, any of that stuff. I generally don't care that much about stats. And maybe I learned that from the original blog. Every so often I'd look at some stats and say, oh my God, I had no idea. 5, 10, 25,000 people have read that. Wow. You know, I had the feeling when I wrote the old blog, I had to write it every day because I had thousands and thousands of readers. And I've seen it both ways, whether it was 2,000 or 20,000 RSS subscribers, those were subscribers. You know, those were people who read my thing. That was like I ran a small town paper, and that was a daily thing, and that mattered a lot to me. I don't have that sense anymore at all with anything that I write. Even when I was writing for Linux Journal, which had quite a few readers at its peak and even late in its life, I didn't have the same sense of writing for a readership, not an audience, but a readership that I had back with my old blog. So there's kind of two sides to this. One is an ease of writing, and the other is an ease of reading. And I wouldn't want to burden Little Outliner with the second thing. I don't even want to burden it too much with the first thing. Again, I would be reluctant to generalize from the way I think and write. But I do think there's what you can get from me is the outline-y way that I look at things, or my kind of outline-y way of looking at things and organizing things. And sort of the spirit of it. And people just walked into my space here, so I got distracted, sorry. Anyway, so let me continue down, because there's your third thing, and I don't remember what it was. So I'll have to go back and re-listen to that. But that's probably enough. How many? Oh, God, I'm past 30 minutes. All right. Well, I'll edit this down. I'm doing this in Audacity, so that'll be easier.